Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, all you Golden State Warriors fans out there, you got to tune in to the Oakland Warriors podcast, the official Dubs podcast of Fans First Sports Network. It's awesome. It's hosted by Patrick Epino and a rotating crew of guests who follow this franchise for decades, just like Doug and I have with the Giants. The show dives deep into all things Warriors, both on the court and off. Will the Dubs be legit contenders this year? Is Steve Kerr actually going to play Jonathan Kuminga enough to have a breakout year? Will the Chris Paul trade be a blessing or a curse? I'm very interested to know that myself. And most importantly, can Steph win another title, or maybe two? The show takes an all-encompassing look at the greatest team in the NBA. No hot takes, no agendas, no bluster, and no goofy knee-jerk reactions. Just smart, insightful Warriors talk about the past, present, and future from one of the best in the business. Tune in and subscribe to the People's Podcast, the Oakland Warriors Podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, and on YouTube at youtube.com/Oakland Warriors. Let's go!
You're listening to Giants Croncast, a podcast chronicling the San Francisco Giants, featuring Brian Murphy and Doug Brazoni, part of FFSN, Fans First Sports Network.
No point there just mentioning that today's been hellacious. Now it's time to talk about the Giants. Officially eliminated from postseason contention.
Woo! Hey, only what? Four meaningless games all year long, baby. We did it.
That's right. Be as competitive as possible for as late into the season as possible. Congratulations. Goal achieved. Do you remember when the Simpsons had that joke of the mid-season shows and the Simpson family were sitting and watching on the couch? And Homer was holding up a pennant that just said, a flag that just said mid-season on it.
Is that the one that he put away because they all wanted to go to the Cirque du Soleil ripoff? So he got a new flag that said French Circus?
You know what? Now I think there's just a running gag with him having those little flags with words on it. I think that's probably what it was. No, because that was where they had like Admiral Baby. And like That was the shows you're watching. And Marge goes, I guess it did turn into that. But Marge is like, I don't think it's possible for him to achieve the rank of admiral so quickly. That's what the Giants make me want to do. Talk about other things. But we're not going to do that because this is a Giants podcast. It's a chronicle of the Giants in podcast form, a croncast, if you will. So we must discuss it. They're grappling with the Padres. Ended, finally. The Padres, another team in the NL West with a disappointing season. I mean, let's face it, the Giants have had a disappointing season, a monumentally disappointing season, a hilariously bad season. Like, there's ways to characterize this, but I think it's only fair to say it's on the side of negative. There's not, like, the tone and tenor, when this all said and done, we should only be looking back at the season negatively, I think. Am I way out of line here?
I mean, you can take positives away from it. You can say, you know, Luis Matos got his feet wet in the majors. That could be a big deal. It was great to get a look at, you know, Kyle Harrison. Marco Luciano showed some real flashes of hitting the ball super, super hard, which is fun. But on the other hand, man, it was not pleasant to watch the Giants this year. I did not enjoy that at all because they were bad and I would prefer they not be bad. I think the Giants should be good. That's my very controversial opinion. My takes are too hot, but I understand that.
Now we have one more podcast to kind of wrap up the final weekend and we'll probably do some more end of season wrap ups next week. So we should just address but it's hard not to talk about, you know, three games left. It's hard not to talk about the season up to this point because it's pretty much in the books here. And whatever happens with the Dodgers is sort of irrelevant. Another classic ass whomping from the Dodgers, though, to close out the season. I mean, we'll have come full circle. It will be an incredible turn of events. And so it makes me want to ask the question, Doug. How are you feeling about the state of the Giants?
I don't think I went long enough for the rake joke there. Not great. The problem with the Giants is they can't acquire impact talent.
Or develop.
I mean, hey, we'll see. You know, this is Luciano has really been their first hitting prospect in a very long time. Where outside observers are like, no, he could be something special. You know, we talked ourselves into some guys. You know, we were like, hey, man, look at the power that Chris Shaw has. And scouts are like, don't do that. And we're like, no, I'm going to get excited about this. And it will not. And then it just immediately fizzled out. But, you know, there are outside observers who are not biased like us about the Giants who are looking at Luciano and saying, yeah, he could be special. He has a really good chance to be special. And that's, you know, that could be something. You get that kind of talent at shortstop. You know, he had several hits over the last week that he had over 110 miles an hour. And you're all right. You know, that's I believe that'll happen 200 times next year. I'm basing that on nothing other than my need to have the team not look like this. Because the way the team looked this year, it felt like shit. Like, especially the last 2 months.
Yeah, I mean, the last 3 months, well, that's going to be part of the autopsy on the season is, you know, I think I made the really mean comment of they're never as bad as they look, but they're never as good as they look. That's what we've learned from the Giants. They're not really that good. But the under the hood stuff, it really is like mid-June. And so that's a long time. And really, the better way to frame it is they were good for about 6 weeks, maybe 7 weeks. And that is not – that's a hot streak where we're all guilty of this. We're like, oh, it's this guy's good. It's the Chris Shelton effect. The player that for whatever reason is the one that comes to mind where he had like 10 home runs in the first month or whatever of the season. Like, this guy's amazing. And then like 2 years later, he's out of baseball. So – it's really hard to hold true to the North Star of player development and smart acquisitions. And listen, you wrote a really good piece, which before we started recording, you seemed to suggest you had forgotten you wrote, which is incredible. We're going to talk about it in a moment. But before we do that, I want to expand on this current situation. You know, you mentioned Marco Luciano, and that is, you know, I've now come back the other way, Doug, on Luciano. I was like, this guy's over. He's got the back issues. He's going to whatever. And then he kind of came, you know, he revitalized his career this season. He worked it out. He hit well, and now he's on the major leagues. He is hitting the ball hard. But I still swung back to like, his back's going to go out at some point. That's just the thing that happens. But the other part of it is this. He could be something special. That's entirely true. It's completely silly for us to expect that every all-star prospect hits the ground running. And, you know, Luciano, an 800 OPS almost right now. That's really cool. I do want to point this out, which I had to make a comparison to because I'm a sick individual. I was like, how did Mookie Betts do in his first season? Because I really want the Giants to have a Mookie Betts. That's the kind of like the bar is like until they have an amazing five-tool player in the lineup. That's what we're talking about. And that will cure so many ills. And guess what? In his first season, 291, 368, 444, and 812 OPS in 213 plate appearances. Now, Luciano is obviously not going to reach that mark. And it's such a small sample size. It's not worth comparing. But I will say, okay, fine. I'm going to walk back towards you instead of just getting in my car and driving away. Up is back. It's over. It doesn't matter. Now, the question is, does that mean, given this very small sample size, where he's not Mookie Betts? I'm not saying that, but that OPS being around 800, which is where Mookie Betts was, maybe that's something, and maybe the hard hit data, and fielding burp aside, there's a pandemic going on in the Giants clubhouse, Doug, where the fielders can't remember the number of outs going on. It afflicted Yaz and then Luciano. I guess what I'm getting at is, might Luciano be the one guy that they're not going to try to strenuously platoon, at least in the near term? In the near term, I mean extending beyond even these last three games. It could even be in spring training and the early part of the season. Because what we saw this past week, since we last recorded, it doesn't matter. It's happening all the time. Everyone, no one is immune to platoons. Oh, there's the poster. That's the new slogan. Nothing, instead of SF, nothing like it. No one is immune to platoon.
I mean, it rhymes, so that's pretty exciting.
Gabe Kapler in the Sunday night game pinch hit Patrick Bailey for Elliot Ramos. And it wound up being a game-ending double play. Patrick Bailey had already talked to the press about how he was gassed, so his knees are weak. Patrick Bailey, as much as I want him to be, is not a great hitter, at least not this season. He's whatever. Is he an improvement over the righty-righty matchup and Elliot Ramos, who then the very next night or two nights later struck out on three pitches in one of the most Brett Pill at-bats I can remember seeing? I guess my point is, that is not like a terrible crime that happened. It was simply like, really, you care this much at this point, like that you're going to do it this much. And I was reminded in the conversations afterward and even writing about it, it's like, this is what the Giants want to be. Roger Munter had this thought of like, I'm not sure that they are that interested in finding guys they don't have to platoon. I think they're more comfortable doing platoons. And so I just want to talk to you about the pluses and minuses of that. Maybe you disagree with that premise entirely.
I'll say it's entirely possible there was not a right answer on Sunday night. Like, Patrick Bailey looked terrible, had an awful result from the at-bat. Ramos might have looked just as bad.
Mm-hmm.
That's entirely possible. I just want to get that out on the table before I say, of course it was the wrong move.
Ramos might have just struck out. There still would have been one more out to play with.
Yeah, exactly.
He could have swung at a ball that bounced away. It could have been a strikeout and he's on first. Other possibilities existed. So.
But I mean, it's not just that I think strategically it was wrong, but I think in terms of building up confidence in a player and showing them that you believe in them, sometimes you just let them take that at bat. Like the Giants at that point were not playing for their season. The season was over. Like I think Andrew Baggerly spent 3 or 4 days tweeting out what had to do, like playoff scenarios for how the Giants could make it in. And they started off at wildly implausible and only got less likely from there. It was like, if the Giants win every game and the Diamondbacks and Marlins and the Diamondbacks and Reds both lose at least 7 of 8 and the Marlins lose 5 of 7, I was like, okay, none of those things are going to happen. So we're already at a 0% chance. They weren't going to make the playoffs based on that at bat. And isn't it more important for Elliot Ramos to show you what he does in that at bat than to put an exhausted Patrick Bailey, who's caught at that point, 40 more games than is in his career, up for a pinch hit at bat in the top of the 10th or whatever. Top of the 9th, top of the 10th. Yeah. Whatever it inning was. It doesn't make sense to do that unless you're platooning based on nothing more than your inherent than inertia. Like, you have the plan to platoon when you can. And so you see a platoon opportunity and you take it and then that's it. I don't think that's a good way to run a team. I think you have to take fatigue into account. I think you have to take Bailey has looked god awful at the plate for the last month, maybe more. You have to think about that. Like, it's not a good idea in any sense other than it's what you've always done. So it's what you're going to do. It's like in, It's like in 2021, Brian, when you were still complaining about the Giants, even though they were objectively good. And everyone was like, I understand, Brian, this is what you do. But you don't have to do it.
I wasn't blogging about them or podcasting about them. So
yeah, you were just complaining on Twitter.
I don't remember what I said, but what did I say?
I don't know. I just know you said it.
Okay.
But I mean, it's the same kind of thing. We're like, you don't, this isn't necessary. You can go another way for now. I understand. We will come back to the platoons. We will come back to the Giants sinking to mediocrity. And then you can complain about them all you want and it'll be fair. But for now, it's not, there's no upside. And they did it anyway, just because it's what they do. And I think they should get away from that. I don't think it's a good thing.
Well, the other part that like that stuck in my mind as I was watching it, I was like, Alex Cobb's season ended because you just let him go. And no one questioned that. Kyle Harrison, you let him go. No one questioned that. And I get it. The Giants hitters suck. They are all awful. They don't deserve to be even in the situations they're in. And you're talking about a marginal gain, but it is a, it's a gain, you know?
I mean,
and
maybe so, that's the thing.
Right, right. And as one of the commenters pointed out, that there is some research that suggests that you're, that by any time you put a pinch hitter in, you're actually inserting a cold hand in the situation. So the leverage opportunity, the numbers that might be generated just from the platoon advantage are actually impacted by the guy just being off the bench and coming into the game. Multiply that by the fact that it's a catcher who has never played this much before, like logically, which they're supposed to be following data and process. And like the process there, it was flawed. It was flawed. It unmistakably a flawed analysis that led to that, unless it is like the thing we'd made fun of. Center fielder leads off, second baseman bats second. Like the Bruce Bochy, like this is the factory production of lineup roster management that we're doing. And I think it really was just like, got to get a lefty up there against the righty. Got to get a lefty up there against the righty. And that's it. And it does it in that moment, it did call into question this entire project. I can't lie. I think it's born of frustration, obviously, but also watching them for 3 months just eat shit, just fucking suck, just be total losers, and every bit of their best laid plans blowing up in their faces like a septic tank. Just like all of it, just going to hell. And then all of a sudden, you're gonna pull that shit. It's like the time and place of the bullshit is kind of where it was like, it's, the frustrations are valid. I think perfectly valid, and I'm defending the general practice of it, but I think it is a sign of a larger thing, a larger issue.
I'll say this: over the last month, Patrick Bailey, and we're recording this on Wednesday, so the stats are the month before that, doesn't include whatever happened last night. Patrick Bailey, 66 plate appearances, hitting 164, 227, 246. That is a weighted runs created plus of 32. Casey Schmidt has 35 plate appearances in that time, hitting a not particularly good 226, 265, 355 by weighted runs created plus 66, twice as good as Patrick Bailey. He's done for the year. They should shut him down. Playing him does not help anybody. I understand that pitchers like throwing him. I think he's tired on defense. I think he's tired on offense. I don't think that he can play baseball technically, but he's not the player that you want to see out there right now. He's too tired.
Another weird issue, because it's like, I thought the Giants had a world-class coaching staff, health and fitness. They had a sleep management plan, nutrition up the wazoo. Like they had every advantage. And I'm not saying that that means every player is now able to play a robotic number of games. Camilo Duvall, obviously impacted by the World Baseball Classic. I accept your analysis. Like, I think that all makes sense. It just seems like every marginal advantage that the Giants have worked to have, it was like vaporware, or like the raccoon putting the cotton candy in the pond to clean it. Like, it just didn't happen. It just disappeared on them when they needed it the very most.
I'll say this in their defense on Bailey. He has been hurt a few times in his career. So playing 40 more games, like, you have to build that strength up.
I agree. I'm being a little unfair, obviously, yeah. But it's like at this point, I'm not seeing the design here. Seeing some pretty obvious, rote, thoughtless, automatic robot thinking. The very thing that this entire group has been blamed or accused of from the beginning. And then here you go, when it's bone on bone, or when, you know, we've been stripped down to the studs and you're just seeing, you know, the skeleton of the entire edifice. And then it's like, oh, there is just a guy on a bicycle. Just that's all it is. There's no magic here. It's just, you're going to follow the math that assiduously. So
John Hamm is just making Kimmy and her friends turn a crank in a bunker.
That's it.
and they don't know how to do anything else.
So incredibly frustrating. And I think we spent a little more time on that topic than I wanted, but it bleeds perfectly into our next little bit here about, you know, everyone's getting a turn kicking the Giants while they're down. It's the fun thing to do right now. We talked about the Tom Verducci article in our last episode, and I just commented on, I thought the timing was interesting. You know, it seemed like it was poised or timed to put out there, like, alert, alert, one of these hangers on in the wild card chase, they're not one of us. and I think there was an element of like making sure all eyes were on the Giants to make sure that everyone knew that they sucked. I think there was an element of that. And then the Giants got swept in Arizona pretty handily, pretty easily, pretty effortlessly, to the point where I'm like, you know, Major League Baseball might have to step in because the Giants could accidentally like leave a rosin bag in the way of like a good player's path and someone could get hurt on another team. And that they don't deserve that when they're facing the Giants. Anyway, so you get some follow-up articles from that. You get Ken Rosenthal helicoptering in with his bow tie and dropping talking some smack. You've got Andrew Baggerly that, and then that encourages the beat reporters to finally like get off their toadstools and actually like report some stuff. Now, maybe it was just because the two national writers kind of loosened things up that the players felt like they could approach the beat writers and say some more, or the beat writers could ask about those articles and then get a response from there, indicating that the clubhouse was a little unsettled. Now, I'm front loading all this. You can go find the articles, Baggerly on The Athletic, Ken Rosenthal as well. And kind of the same general idea of like of Verducci's article. The Giants are, you know, managed by a math book. It's very boring. They have no stars. And actually, I want to say this other thing. In the first Friday of the season, I think it was the first Friday, Jim Bowden was on Sirius XM on their Power Alley show in the morning, which is my favorite radio baseball show outside of our show, which is a podcast. It's not the same thing. Every once a week, Jim Bowden comes on as well, and he's really obnoxious, and I think they all know that. But the fact that he was right, Doug, in week one just boils me, just upsets me. He's like, that team. He's like, that team, you know what that team has? A bunch of really nice players to put around a really great player. You know what that team is missing? A really great player. I'm like, God damn it. How could you, you just throw something at a dartboard in week one and you're right the whole way through. God damn it. So he was out on them from the beginning, and then the national press, because of every, you know, they weren't after the Judge and Correa stuff, everyone left him alone. And then we finally get this at the end. Doug, you don't remember this, but you wrote a really compelling piece on your Substack, Giants Doug. Remember the name of your Substack? Giants Doug.
Yes. Giants something. It has something to do with the Giants.
And your basic question is, so who should be fired for this? And I think that's where that's what this should land at. That's part of this whole theme or this topic of like, let's kick the Giants while they're down. It's completely.
They deserve it.
They really deserve it. I have an article that I can't decide if I'm going to put up on today or if I'm going to put up on Monday, being like, who deserves this season the most ranked? And going from there. And Bobby Evans is on that list, just so you know.
I mean, I assume Charles Johnson is number one.
Anyway, so you wrote like who, and you went through it. You went through the whole thing, and it was very fair with your, you know, sarcasm, your perfect sarcasm, how upsetting it is that you turn a phrase so well. Oh, It's almost like you revise these after you write them.
I do not. I write them.
Even more frustrating.
When I've been up for 17 hours and I need to go to bed, that's my motivation. That's how I'm like, all right, I got to write some words out. Doesn't matter how good they are. Hope there aren't any typos, baby. There are always typos.
So write tired, write angry. But
yeah,
you just boiled it down to, I was wrong last week, but you boiled it down to this. They are incapable of getting the one player they need, the one type of player they need to make this whole thing go boom, to make it all work. All that said, all the other stuff they're doing, it makes perfect sense, and it just didn't work out, and it's hard to understand why they should get one more year.
Right. I mean, it's hard to understand why they should get another year, but it's also hard to see who's out there who will do better next year.
Issue. Yeah, but I do think I think they should get one more year, because I actually do lean on, it's kind of remarkable everything that's gone wrong, because it's like, what the hell? Like, it's really stunning to see like Conforto and Haniger turning into platoon guys, I would think is because they were so bad that they had to be turned into platoon guys. And so that makes sense. Like, oh, these guys aren't performing. But then you brought up the point of like, well, why aren't they performing? Is there anything the team could have done about that? That's something they need to explore.
Yeah. I mean, 100%. Like, that's, why do you have a coaching staff? I mean, that's kind of the question. Like, how can a major league coaching staff that was supposed to be top notch, state of the art, using data driven AI to create new outcome paradigms and result matrices, and I don't know, I don't have any more buzzwords. They're supposed to be making these guys better, and they're not. So, I mean, in that sense, you look at that and you say, this is on the coaching staff. But at the same time, if the front office, and when I say Farhan, I'm using Farhan as a proxy for Farhan plus all the dudes under him, right? If Farhan doesn't bring in the right players, you can't polish a turd. Like, you could give me, personally, me, the greatest baseball coach in the world, I would still be god-awful at baseball. Not to say that that Mitch Haniger is close to my level of baseball. I think he's likely to be much better. But there's a point when the players hit when they can't do it. And it's entirely possible he's there. It's possible that he was a huge miss by the scouting department, which, you have to look at those jobs too. It's also possible that he was coming off an injury that he never really healed from. Yeah, once he started to feel a little better, he just kept getting hurt. This wasn't the year for him. He'll come back next year and be better. It's possible Michael Conforto will be better next year if he's back or if he's not back. I looked up Jason Wirth's stats recently because I like doing that. I wanted to make a comparison for a bad contract, and his contract wasn't bad enough for him to be the comparison. But, his first year with Washington after signing that big deal coming over from the Phillies, his OPS plus was like 98. And then the next year is in the 120s, and it was like 154, and then it was in the 120s, and then he was bad for the next, and he wasn't that good for the next 3 years. But I mean, sometimes guys just take that year. They need, they have a little bit of a dull year, and with Conforto, you can understand it. He didn't play at all last year because of injury. The Giants just took a shot. It didn't work out. The other thing is that, the thing that the front office is doing, it might work next year. Like, you look at all these young players, I don't think Luis Matos is going to be a bad player. He's just not there yet. Hopefully Marco Luciano will get there next year. Kyle Harrison has shown flashes, but he's not there yet. You give them an offseason, you give them big league training regimen, you give them what they need to succeed, probably one or two of them will succeed. That would be a huge win. And so you look at the actual thing that Farhan was building, and to get rid of him before he's able to, get the capstone on it, it does seem premature, even if the results this year were awful.
And that's what I really want to like plead with Giants fans. I think your anger is completely justified. I'm just saying, hold on for just one more season before the fire Farhan is the only thing you should be saying. Like, you should roast these guys. Kapler, Kai Correa, like, they're, this entire project is teetering on Nate Silver being right for one election and suddenly being anointed. You know what I mean? Like, anointed this guru for political polling or something. It's not just a make or break for the rebuild of the Giants. I kind of think it's approaching a referendum on can you just do this with paper scouting? Can you just do this with math and, like, good humor and, like, module, you know, the margins of, like, making sure people are drinking and sleeping right? Like, can you work around talent by having a mega brain just calling the shots? Like, that is what's approaching. And I know a lot of people want to see that fail because we root for teams and the players on those teams, and that makes sense. But it's kind of just another way of, like, good players make everyone, the manager, the front office, the ownership, the fan base, it makes everyone look great, right? You got a good team. Oh, these are the best fans in baseball. Oh, look at how smart the management is, the coaching staff. Everyone's working great because the players are great. And all the value proposition of Moneyball is like, no, first you must give credit to the front office. Then you can say the players are good. That's all that's been happening in the inversion. And you know what? Right now they're asking for credit they don't deserve because the players aren't good. So can the players be good? And I think if enough people want to say no, they can't. I'm more on that line. I'm more like, yeah, these prospects are whatever. But we have to remember that that development isn't linear. That's absolutely true. It's been proven this year. Like, Marco Luciano's career was, I think, a question coming into this season. And he had a terrible year last year. And then look where he is this year. We're very excited about him. He basically rose right back to his prominent status. Kyle Harrison's development, like, everyone was excited, and then he had a rough spring training, and then it's like, is he going to make it up this year? And then he's come up, and he's just looked like a guy trying to figure things out. Mitch Haniger, to your point, I want to come back to this. Do we just discount that a guy is switching leagues? Seems like something that just got tossed aside, either with universal DH or, interleague play all the time or something. But, I mean, how many times had he faced the NL West? How many times has he been in all these parks and all this other stuff? Isn't that some fact, like, to your point about Jason Worth, I mean, that's league to league, that's team to team. That's not quite the same thing really at all, actually. But, like, an adjustment of some kind on top of the injuries, it seems like that makes sense to me. I can see that in my mind as a relevant factor. The other part we have to say for the front office, and I hate to do this because I'm really upset with them because their product is awful. It's a boring, entertaining product. Someone else pointed this out, and I apologize. I can't remember who did this, but maybe it was in the Baggerly article. I can't remember. The Giants actually did have bad luck. And it's terrible to say that. It's just awful to say that because it's like, you know, screw you guys. Okay, but what did they try to do in the offseason? They tried to get either Aaron Judge or Carlos Correa. They tried to get why did they get Carlos Correa? They have Brandon Crawford. Well, they knew Brandon Crawford wasn't going to be a guy they could rely on. And so they could, that fell through. That was bad luck. The Carlos Correa deal was bad luck. Brandon Crawford getting hurt, not bad luck. But Tyro Estrada getting hurt at the same time was bad luck. And so that's like, that's where you look at it as like, okay, so up the middle, they get obliterated by injury. And should their depth have been better to account for that? Yes, that is a problem spot. That has been a problem spot for the last two seasons. Was Dixon Machado last year? Yes. Remember that?
So, yeah.
Yeah, Mark Matias this year. You know what I mean? Like, that is – so it's like it's bad luck, but it also – see, it reveals the guy in a bicycle. It's like, what are you doing, babe? I thought you were all about the depth. What happened? Fans, give them a year, but give them an awful year that even if they win the World Series, they all wonder if they should come back. That's what they deserve. That's what they deserve, because it's like, what the hell's going on?
I mean, hey, I remember after 2010, there was a small but real subset of fans who were like, well, now Sabian's going to be around forever. Like, that was their takeaway. So you know what? Give Farhan that if it goes great next year.
I mean, they already go into the offseason with this handicap of they're not going to get Shohei Ohtani. So they already are like front loaded with disappointment and another letdown that's just in the line under Zaidi's tenure. So they've already got a failure waiting for them. And it's like, well, that's already a tough spot to work around. I think next week we'll talk about all these trade options or these trade articles out there, which I'm just going to tease my thoughts on this a little bit. Everyone's losing their minds. We're all grasping at straws here. I think some of these trade proposals are wild. That's all I'm going to get. I think people are kind of forgetting. I mean, the proposals are basically beat Bobby Evans. Trade Brian Reynolds for Andrew McCutcheon is like the premise of every article. I'm like, we joked that this was a Sabian speedrun, but now we're honestly entertaining the Evans speedrun. Come on, guys. So, anyway, is that boy math? Is that those an example That's of boy math?
Yeah. Yeah. So,
okay. I want to end on the kicking the Giants while they're down part of this, which is fun to do. And I encourage everyone to do it. I think you should just be like, I got my eye on this team. They better get their shit together. I'm sick of losing, said Logan Webb. Remember that? That wasn't that long ago. That was this week. But it brought, this is the question I want to ask you since you've been a Clubhouse reporter. So Ann Killian in her column on Tuesday said, Webb says big changes need to be made. In comments to the Chronicle, Susan Slesser, one player said the front office's inaction at the trade deadline showed a lack of confidence in the team. One player told Slesser that Kapler couldn't lose a clubhouse that he never had before quickly backing off the comment as, quote, too strong. Now, did Susan Slesser write that in an article? I didn't see that.
Not necessarily. I mean, she might have just told Killian about it. I mean,
so that's why, as a reporting chain of custody, what? Explain that.
I mean, so this isn't something that I necessarily did a lot because I wasn't there enough to build the relationships you need for players to go off the record and be honest with you. But like you'll go up to, let's say, Alex Cobb. Let's say it's Alex Cobb, and you go up to him and like you've known him all year. He's been a good guy, and you're like, hey, what have you thought about the way Kapler's handled the clubhouse this year? And he goes, off the record, and you're like, yeah, sure, off the record. And he goes, well, you can't lose a clubhouse you never had. And takes a moment and goes, okay, I mean, that's a little much. His style is that he lets us police ourselves. Any problems in here are our fault. I would guess that that's about what happened. How did it get from Slesser to Killian? It could be that it didn't fit in her art, in whatever article Slesser was writing that she was going to write. And so she let Killian know about it. It was like, can I use that? And Slesser said, sure. Sometimes, you get a good quote and you're like, okay, but this isn't actually as related to what I was writing about as I'd hoped. And so, that's a big organization. Again, I did not have a big organization when I was there. And so she just let her know probably, this is something that, that a player in the clubhouse said, I'm sure she would have said who it was, but, you can use it if you want. And Killian was like, oh, hell yeah, I'm using it. I mean, that would be my speculation.
I'm not going to let Rosenthal work on my turf here. And Baggerly, who is this guy? Yeah, no, I'm not going to. Yeah, I'm going to get in on this. Baggerly's piece, we didn't really talk about this, but, Jock Peterson leading the Pasoy card game and having fun there. And the team playing Jamaican music after losses, which really weirded out players. I'm going to assume it was Mike Yastrzemski who made quote. Yeah. The quote being like, have you ever heard of that before? That's weird.
I mean, the only thing that would point to it not being Yastrzemski is that the quote does kind of suggest the guy has been on other major league teams, which Yastrzemski is not. Mm. But that's very much getting into the weeds on technicalities.
And it couldn't be Michael Conforto because he was like, I was on the Mets. None of this fazes me.
Exactly.
This is a quarterback.
I could see that being JD Davis. Like that would sort of fit.
He was also on the Mets. Mets.
He was also on the Mets, but he's on the Astros. He's also on the
Astros
that.
Too. Yeah, that's true.
So
that's true.
He knows that teams can win sometimes, even if they have to cheat to do it.
Which, hey, maybe that's what year six is all about.
So buy some trash cans, baby. Let's go.
So, but folks, the Giants are not jamming. What does this all mean going forward? It ties back into your post. There has to be a strong reaction by the front office to clean some of this up. I think we've identified several points of like them being getting caught with their pants down, or by their own logic. Oh my God, we can actually use that. That like tripping up on their own logic and coming up short by their own standards that they professed. So the people out there that kind of feel like the team acts like they're better than everybody, or they're smarter than everybody, or like everyone's stupid except me, I think that's fair to be angry about. But I mean, like, you're not going to run a baseball team in your life. And what you said in your article, Doug, the next guy is not going to be better, at least, or the next person, because it could be a woman, next person is not going to be necessarily better, or at least not going to be better next year. So what's the problem? You know what I mean? Like the player development system is better. It's like objectively, tangibly better. They still have a shot at Shohei Ohtani. They still have a shot at swinging some other trade that doesn't involve rental player. There are still options. And I think desperation, like it does with baseball players, can sometimes bring out the best in a performer.
Hey, I mean, I have to get into desperation mode before I can write 100 words. So maybe Farhan has to get into desperation mode before he can acquire a superstar. Before he can make a franchise-defining trade for Pete Alonso, he has to be like, I am going to get fired if I don't do this.
Oh, my God. Yes, do I want Pete Alonso on the team? Yes, I do. Would it cost less to get Rhys Hoskins with the chance of similar production? God, I'm already thinking like them. Yes.
Exactly.
That makes more sense. It makes more sense. I don't know what to tell you. You also have a better shot at re-signing him because of the home. Like, ah, oh, I'm driving myself crazy. They've indoctrinated me. Damn it. So, anyway, Doug, are you going to write about any of this?
I'm going to write about something. And you can see that at giantsdoug.substack.com.
I already mentioned, I already previewed one piece. That's going to be either today or Monday. You have no feelings on that, right? You're not my editor.
No.
But it seems like better for Monday, but also it's an off day before the Dodgers. I don't know. It just seems like you get the Dodgers fans involved reading it. Just talking about clicks. That's all. So I don't know. But it would be fun to drop it on the end of the season wrap up. You know, when everyone comes in to clean out their clubhouse. I'm like, did you see that article this morning about?
Yeah.
I don't know.
My all-time favorite McCovey Chronicles article was 2017 going to the All-Star break when Grant wrote grading the Giants first half, and it was just the letter F in as big of a font as he could. And that was the whole article. I was like, oh, you did it again, Brisby.
That's why he works for the New York Times now.
Exactly.
We'll be back next week with our final Bullpen Trust Power Rankings of 2023. Not looking forward to that. That bunch really broke my heart. I'm not going to
lie. Yeah, they were seeming good for a while, and then they reminded you, no, you don't get to have nice things.
We are relievers. Do not be believers. So until then.
Go Giants.
And then I'll put a car crash in at the end.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll be right back.